Hi, good afternoon. My name's Warren. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 29th, 2000. I had to wait for the new century, and it was one of those things. My home group is the Kalani Milnerton Group in Cape Town, South Africa. And if you're around or any time around on a Thursday night at about 8 o'clock, please join us. If you've got anybody with you, we'll open the meeting. although I come from South Africa, I'm an alcoholic. So my story is much like anybody else's. I grew up in one of those alcoholic homes with all the chaos and destruction and everything that goes with it. I come from a long line of alcoholics, and I used to think that was why I was an alcoholic. I most probably visited my first rehab when I was about six, visiting relatives who were put there because they were unemployable. But like many others in that position, I promised myself that I wouldn't be like my father or my grandfather or those other members of my family, and I would be different. But when it came to taking that drink, it turned out that I was no different. I have an accelerator pedal where other people have a brake, you know. When they've had enough, I'm just starting. And that's the way it was. And it was progressive, and I can track it, you know. It started off just weekends, and eventually it was every day. And I was in the mid-20s where I was drinking every day, and I don't think I was drinking alcoholically. Other people did. But eventually it took me to the same place as many others, and I lost everything. I just didn't get it. You know, I was different. I was different from everybody else. My father sobered up in AA, and I was out there drinking. But he was the alcoholic. He needed AA. And eventually, when I got into enough trouble and I seen enough of those lights and cells You know, this is a crazy disease that tells me I didn't have one. If I say to you that I was beaten up very badly in a good old-fashioned South African police cell, that I lost a kidney, I spent a very painful night with a ruptured kidney, and I didn't put it down to my drinking at all. It was that policeman. You know, I could justify why it was like that, and 2 weeks later, after I'd spent 6 weeks in recovery, I was drinking again and off. And I always say it took me 10 years to get step one right, because from my first visit to a rehab and coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and getting a big book from my father's group, came and gave it to me, not him, but one of his friends in that rehab. It took me 10 years to sober up, in and out of AA. And luckily for me, AA in South Africa is pretty well established. I come from Cape Town. We have 70 meetings a week in Cape Town. In Johannesburg area, there's probably over 100 a week, and in Durban, was probably more than that. And those meetings were there, the people were there. I sat in a meeting and I looked around, and I'd sort of done up to step three, you know, and I had to do step four, but I couldn't do step four without a sponsor. And I looked at the people in these groups, and nobody was special enough to be my sponsor, you know. I needed somebody different from everybody else. And the result is I went back out there. And it took me a long time to bump my head and to eventually accept the fact that I was an alcoholic. And, you know, I attended those meetings, and at one time I got up to 9 months sober, but I knew two people in the meeting by name. I'd get there just in time to sit down so nobody could speak to me, and I would leave as soon as the meeting was finished. But I could say I was going to AA. And funny enough, when I did go back and I was broken enough and beaten enough and really decided that I needed some help, that was the group I went back to. And that was the group I got my first sponsor. That was the group that took me through the steps for the first time. And it is so satisfying today. I'm actually doing service at an international level, and I'm just coming to the end of that. And when I say AA South Africa, everybody says, wow, you know, you come from so long way. What's AA like in South Africa? And I'm happy to tell you that it's well established and it's got structures. And when we speak to our neighboring countries, the guys from the Zimbabwes, the Botswanas, the Namibias, the Ugandas, the Rwandas, where people in groups are sitting, four members in a group in a little town and listening to the same stories week after week, I feel very blessed to have the meetings that I have. And, sir, that's a little bit of my story. I don't know if that's a full 10 minutes, Scott, but if anybody is ever in SA, just look up Alcoholics Anonymous South Africa, Google it. We have a website. It's got all our meetings on, and you're welcome to all of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Warren. How about our friend from Uganda, Marshall?
I am Marshall, a grateful recovering alcoholic from Uganda. My sobriety date is September 25th, 1987. I come from a country which tops the rest of the world in alcohol consumption. That is as per the report of the World Health Organization 2004, and nothing much has changed. I come from a country, as my colleague from South Africa has just said, with not more than 10 AA groups and not more than 50 members of AA who are active. And that is out of a population of 35 million. I sobered up with the support of my sponsor, who was a missionary from Canada in the Catholic Church. He was a priest. I didn't know that there was anything like AA in Uganda until when I decided to end my life, commit suicide. I thought of several ways on how I could do this, and the best way was to get drowned in Lake Victoria, which was the nearest, the biggest lake in Africa. While I was contemplating that, it must have been God, the God I had abandoned for the last 6 years. I was not going to any church. Yet, 6 years before that, I had been ordained a Catholic deacon in Uganda, which means that I had done a lot of training in the seminary, minor seminary, philosophy, theology, and was almost ready to become a Catholic priest. I had basically a few months. But my alcoholism, which I must have started drinking when I was a 3-year-old, that's the situation in Uganda. Every home, almost every home has alcohol. We brew alcohol in our farm, in our homes. Alcohol is sold everywhere, consumed by anyone of any age, and we don't have a law which says a child of 8, 9, 10 cannot drink. We are just there in that kind of country, which is, I should say, surrounded with alcohol. So that's the country I grew in. Therefore, I started drinking when I was 3 years old. And that went on and on and on and on. And I didn't know it was a disease. I knew once in a while I would get drunk, but who wasn't getting drunk after all? That's what I wanted in the long run. I drank to get drunk. I drank to escape problems. So finally, when I had been ordained a deacon, my teachers caught me drunk. I was really drunk. I could not even recall the following morning that someone had said a word to me. So they said, Marshall cannot make a good priest. Let him go out and reform. I could have reformed. I could have gone to AA, but it was not there. So I opted to resign, and that way I left out on my vocation. When I resigned, little did I know that alcoholism is a spiritual disease. I abandoned God. I abused God. I called him all sorts of names and said, God doesn't exist. And for 6 years, I was not entering any church. But here I was contemplating suicide. And a thought came like, it must have been a thought. There was a missionary from Holland who was very kind, who loved us when we were young. Then I said, if I go to this missionary, he's likely to give me some money. The money will help transport me out of the city of Kampala. Then I go someplace up country where I will probably stop drinking. So I went to this missionary. That as I was, sick as I was, and I carried with me my identity card. Luckily, he was there. When he saw me, he said, Marshall, before you are grave to be, see Jesus Christ in front of it ready to receive you. He said, take heart, you will be okay. He didn't give me the money I wanted. Instead, he gave me some few shillings to transport me back to my home 5 miles away. The money was meant to be for a taxi, but I kept it, drank it, and walked home. 2 days later, he had referred me to another priest, the late Father Gerinas, may his soul rest in peace. Now, when I met this priest 2 days later, he told me his own story, how he too was a heavy drinker, how he too was a hopeless drinker and was about to be dismissed from his priesthood, and how too he had stopped drinking through a fellowship known as Alcoholic Anonymous. For the first time, for me to see a white man, a priest, was a drunkard like me, he stopped drinking, it was unbelievable. Then he said, if you don't mind, come and we go to AA. He took me to AA. There I found men, women, sharing their stories. After the meeting, they hugged me. Everyone had a word to say to me. And I stopped drinking, and that priest turned out to be my sponsor. That's why I'm 27 years sober. I'm so grateful to the higher power. I'm so grateful to the AA. However, as you heard in my opening words, we have challenges. We have weak sponsorship. We are very weak at carrying the message to other suffering alcoholics. Almost on every village, we lose 3 or 4 people in a period of just 3 to 4 months. In my own village, we lost 3 alcoholics between January and now. And I'm looking on. Thank God that God planted AA, that there were some good friends from the Garage Dogs men's group in Minneapolis, Minnesota. One of them called Richard had traveled to Uganda on his apostolate, on his church work, but he had carried a case of books, big books, 12 steps and others, and he was worried whom he was going to hand them over to. He searched on internet, called number after number, number after number, and mine went through. I was up country where I ran a rehabilitation center. Are you Marshall? He said, I'm Richard, an alcoholic. I said, I'm also Marshall, an alcoholic. Then he gave me, we met at some place with a case full of books. There could have been 100 books, AA literature approved by New York. And there we started the friendship of AA. A few months later, I saw an invitation to come over, that they will pay my air ticket, accommodate me, and bring me here to this convention. It was like a dream. Who am I? It was like a dream. And finally, I'm here with a spirit of gratitude. The same group, I've been here for the last 2 weeks in Minnesota, Minneapolis. I've been training me, teaching me how to carry the message to other people, how to relate to New York, how to follow our structure, the manual. I have a copy of the manual. And one of my sponsors, that big man is there. And I'm so grateful. He's called Mike, yeah, Hype, we call him. The challenges are there, but my time, my being here, my first time in a convention, I believe I have some good message to take back to Uganda. And wherever you are in Uganda, do not hesitate to call us for a meeting. We are on a website, AA Uganda. You are likely to find only one group in the whole city. But I believe in 5 years' time, like BLW and Bob started, I don't see why we should not have 100 meetings. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marshall. Always makes me think I'm pretty lucky. Pretty lucky. Is Sharon from Australia here? I was looking for her, but I didn't see her. How about Jose, who's now from Nevada, that used to be from Mexico, that Jose? Is he here? I saw him just a moment ago. Where did he go? He's gone. Okay. Volunteers. Please. No? How about Kendra from Sweden? Thank you. Thank you for that help. That's exactly the kind of help I'm looking for.
Hi, my name is Kendra. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for that volunteer, John. I'll tell you guys a little bit about what it's like for me in Sweden. I'm originally from Minnesota. I got sober in 2007. I got sober in 2007, and in 2012, I decided to relocate my life to Sweden, for love, of course. And, you know, I knew that there was an English-speaking AA meeting when I moved there. And so I knew that I would instantly have that connection and that support when I moved there. But what I didn't know was that that meeting was no longer there. So when I moved there, I moved to a country that I had no, first of all, to a country that there was a lot of alcoholics, and that I didn't really have that AA outlet or that AA connection. You know, I still had my sponsor and everything, but, you know, I just kind of knew that I could rely on AA being there. And I had that in Minnesota. You know, within an hour drive, you could have 100 different meetings. And I had nothing. I had no English-speaking AA meetings. And it was an hour and 45 minutes or an hour drive or hour and a half train ride and a bus ride to get to a meeting. And, you know, I didn't have anything. So after, you know, probably 4 months, the thinking started rolling, and I started wondering if I was really an alcoholic, and I started wondering, you know, maybe I was just really young. I was 21 when I got sober, and all those thoughts coming back, and you know, before long, I was sitting on that train, and I was Googling the difference between a heavy drinker and an alcoholic. Turns out I was a heavy drinker as well, and surprise. And so I put myself under that category, and I decided that I was going to start drinking again, and I had planned it all out. And this was, you know, I went from being super active. I had, you know, my sponsor I met every week, and my sponsees, and my home group, and my service, and all of it, and it was just gone. It was, like, pulled out from underneath me. So my sponsor had said, when I first asked her to be my sponsor, she said, you know, one of the requirements is that you make that call before you decide to drink. And so I made that call. I never thought that I would make that call, and I called her and I said, you know, this is it. This is that call. I'm going to drink wine tonight because it's fancy, and I was a very classy drinker, and never was. And we sat on that phone and we talked for over an hour, and I cried and I laughed and I talked about how crazy it was, the thoughts, and by the end of that call, I had a plan and I needed to start an AA meeting. And you know, I knew a couple other people that I had known were in the area, and I got a hold of them. And one of those things that echo in my mind so clearly is she said, you know, pain is a great motivator. And for me, that was just exactly what it was, is I was in so much pain and I was dying again. And, you know, 4.5 years sober, and I felt like I was just barely hanging on. And we started an English-speaking AA meeting in Malmo, Sweden, Mondays at 5:30. And at first, we were actually three people in our meeting for the first year. We listened to each other's stories over and over and over again. But we showed up. You know, we had a commitment to that meeting, and we showed up every single Monday. I didn't miss that meeting, I don't think, for the first 2 years that I was there. And, I mean, we planned our vacations around it. We planned everything around that meeting. And we have now had that meeting sometimes in the upward 20s. We have people from the Swedish community that join our meeting. We have the thing that has amazed me the most is how this isn't about me. You know, this has nothing to do with me. That meeting is for the Swedish person who is too nervous to go to a Swedish meeting. It's for the traveler. It's for the person who's working abroad for a few months. And so if you're ever in Malmo, Sweden, or Lund, or Copenhagen even, you can come on over and visit our meeting. It's still active, and the other thing too that I just want to plug in as well is that I had somebody from my meeting really kind of, well, gently push me into service for Continental European region. And it's been one of those, the service commitment that I made with them. I'm the European Young People's Liaison Officer, and I've been able to work with young people all over Europe, and it's just been one of those, you know, rocketed into the next dimensions. It's just been amazing to have connections all over the world. And I'm just so grateful for that experience, for somebody really strongly pushing me into another level of service outside of just my meeting. So just beyond grateful for that. So if you're ever in the area, come on. We can always use support. And thanks for that.
Thank you, Kendra. Any other soon-to-be former friends want to volunteer someone? Yes, please. Yes, please. Oh, there we go.
G'day, friends. I'm Melinda. I'm an alcoholic sober today. I hate microphones. My sobriety date is December 11, 1996. Thank you. My home group is Wodonga on a Monday night, and we get about 10 people at my home group. So this is a bit big. Just a little bit about what it was like. I only drank for 11 years. I got to AA when I was 26. For most of that 11 years, I didn't think there was too much of a problem until I had a liquid lunch, what I call a liquid lunch, and I went back to work in a really unfit state, made this huge, big mistake, which cost the company that I work for about $750,000 and 12 people their jobs. And it was only then that I tried to control my drinking. Then that I started to think perhaps there might be an issue here. I might add that I'd been in Al-Anon for 18 months, drunk at every Al-Anon meeting. Wondering why people suggested I have a look at AA. What would I want to go there for? What, me? So anyway, so I didn't drink for long after that mistake. My first meeting was an anniversary meeting in Melbourne. It was, well, I say a big meeting, but this is bigger. There was probably a couple of hundred people there. No disrespect to anybody here, but all I could see was old men, and I thought that'd be right. I'm the only female alcoholic in the world. What am I going to do? I heard someone say that if I didn't want to get drunk, to not pick up the first drink one day at a time and to keep coming back. And that was the only reason I went to my second meeting, was because they said come back. I didn't identify with all the other stuff about the car crashes and, you know, that, I don't know, stays in rehab and jail, any of that, because I haven't done any of that stuff yet. But I kept coming back because people said keep coming back. I got my first service position at about 12 months. I was secretary of a very small country group. Again, about 10 people. I was secretary in, I don't know, I did GSR later on, and I've done lots of service. I've had lots of awesome experiences in recovery, and I've had some rather challenging ones too. I guess a couple of the most awesome ones was that I bought a house, you know, and sold a house, and I've upgraded my car, and I've got, you know, good jobs and that kind of stuff. Got married, which 90% of the time I like. Well, I won't talk about the other 10%. So there's some pretty awesome things. You know, the challenging things were that I, you know, I've had some rather challenging relationships. I had a partner that, I don't know, I suppose a polite way to put it is that he had some defects of his own and was charged and went off to jail. We were engaged to be married at the time, and he was charged with some stuff and went off to jail, and that was a bit of a challenge. I lost my nan when I was 5 years sober. And she was the one that had taken me into her home and helped me to detox and looked after me. And then in 2012, I lost my mum. She was my best friend in the whole wide world. And only 2 weeks after I lost my mum, the Australian Convention was in Melbourne. And I think I cried for the whole time. Every time someone said, "How are you?" I would don't ask me how I am. And currently I'm an area delegate. For Southern Region of AA, which I thoroughly enjoy. Just before I finish, this is my first international convention. It's my first time in the US. I booked, and I've come here alone. I booked my trip in September last year. I got this new job and it was, you know, looking really great. I thought, oh, yay, so I booked the trip and paid for it. I'd had the job 2 or 3 months. And then 2 weeks after I booked the job, I lost my job. Booked the trip, I mean, I lost my job. I thought, crap, now what am I going to do? But anyway, I got another job and I don't know. Look, I just want to say it's great to be here. It's such an awesome opportunity. And, yeah, I hope to meet all of you. If you ever want to pop into Wodonga Monday night, please do. You're in the area. Although if you all come at once, we might run out of coffee and biscuits. But anyway. And I've only got one spare bed, but hey. Thanks for listening.
That's great. Well, our next speaker is coming forward. Kendra reminded me of a story and how wonderful it is to go to Europe and find an English-speaking meeting. My son was playing soccer a number of years ago. I was about 8 years sober. And he was in Belgium, and we were watching him play. And after a soccer game in Belgium, they go into the clubhouse, and everybody has a beer. And they have them in these little glasses like this. You know, the really harmless size? You know, and the good thing for me was that I'd been going to English-speaking meetings while I was in Europe, because the thought that followed, oh, that's a harmless size, was, but not for you. And so thank you for people in Europe who carry English-speaking meetings.
Hi, my name is Ivy. I'm a colleague. I come from Beijing, China. I'm here just to show you that God's grace can be everywhere, and a miracle can happen to someone, even to someone who come from a communist country. And my sobriety date is January the 3rd, 2011. It is really not normal, because even today, alcoholism and AA knowledge about AA is still not a common sense in China. So I hit bottom as everyone else in this room, and just long story short, I did lots of things that I couldn't do. And then finally I found AA, and at that time, Chinese AA was a small group with only like less than 20 people. We shared a clubhouse together with the English group. And on total, there were only like 40 of us. And today there are more than 100 in Beijing. And the Chinese group was founded in 2000, just after the International Convention. And some Chinese doctors were invited by an old member, American, named David. And the Chinese doctors were very touched by the convention. And when they came back to China, they started this experiment in the hospital. So the first Chinese group started in a mental hospital. And at that time, the chair were nurses or doctors. And just started like this. And at the very beginning, there were no step works. Basically, it was just the alcoholics and the alcoholics. They just talked to each other and complained a lot. But even though when one alcoholic see another one, and that common feeling can comfort each other, and just this simple honesty can just make they keep sober for a long time. And later, some English, Chinese-speaking foreigners started coming and sponsoring the Chinese members. And then we have our group today, and we have the online meetings. There are more than 200 people attending the online meetings every day. And we have like almost 10, like face-to-face meetings scattered in China. So now the Chinese groups, Chinese AA are developing very fast. So, yeah. So I'm very grateful to be here, and yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you to Ivy. I've been to a meeting like that, I think, you know, the one she was describing here.
I am not a fan, and I'm not that tall. There we go. Is that better? Can you hear me? So my name is Liesel, and I'm from all over the place, but we'll go with England, Blackpool, England. If you've ever been, you probably won't go back again. All my family still lives there, so I have to go back on a regular basis. But I call Baltimore, Maryland home now, and so I don't know. It's actually a really beautiful place, despite the news lately. Please come visit us in Baltimore. My sobriety date is October 10th of 2004. Time flies. Like the lady from Australia said, I only drank for 9 years. Celebrating 10 years in October, I finally got to this point where I've been sober longer than I drank. And I finally get to a point where I've lived in America longer than I lived in England. And all of these things are just, time flies. And I'm blessed for that. I got to the same point as Marshall, where the jumping off point and jumping was the best option. And the situation that God had put me in, the places he put me in, were what saved my life and allowed me to come to the San Antonio International Convention, and this one, this time, with amazing friends and people that I love. Like I said, I drank in England. Back then, it was kind of like that rule where you can drink legally at home over the age of three. Under the age of three, it was for medicinal purposes only. So that brandy for the toothache was completely acceptable. But when I started drinking at 12, it was gone. By 13, it was every night of the week. And I was an intelligent alcoholic, I'm sure like a lot of the people in here. And I did good at school and all that good stuff. I was a ballerina. I did all sorts of things. And within, you know, 2 years, I did all sorts of things, but none of them had anything to do with school or ballet. And I came over to America, having been born in Seattle, lived there for a year, and came back to America when I was 19, and it was amazing. Jack Daniel's bottles were huge, half the price. I wasn't old enough to drink again, so talk about reviving the conviviality of youth. I felt like I was doing that. In that drunken haze, I joined the U.S. military. Later, I became grateful for that at the time. I joined the U.S. military drunk. One of the hardest things was going to sign in the day I was going to basic and not drinking after midnight. Not drinking at all that day, but had to have one at 5 to 12. And, you know, a lot of my life was that. I have a son who will be 16 next week, and I wanted to go home so many times to him. And I would have that one glass of wine, and it would all be over. But with the military, I got sober in Hawaii. Beautiful place. Amazing, you can be so depressed and miserable for 18 months. The Army took me from Hawaii to Germany. On my two-year anniversary, I hit one of the biggest drinking countries in the world. My higher power has a pretty good sense of humor. But I did what I was told. I was in a meeting within 5 days. It was 45 minutes away. It was an international English-speaking meeting. We had people from Iceland, Romania, Germany, England, America. It was amazing. Same as we've heard from people today, the stories were just the same. The feelings were just the same, even when there was those little differences in our day-to-day lives. You know, I went to a convention in England a couple of years later visiting family and bumped into half a dozen of those people at that meeting in northern England. That's how our program works. from Germany. I spent 15 months in Iraq. I spent a month in Kuwait. We had meetings there. The 15 months I was in Iraq, we had meetings there, Serenity in the Sand, three nights a week. There was a lot of folks from Ethiopia, from the Philippines that worked on the military bases. They came. I complain when there's a meeting that I could walk to in Baltimore area, out of the 100 meetings we have a day. And I just can't be bothered because I've got to get up and get in the car. People used to fly in between bases in Iraq to fly in just to get an AA meeting. And I can complain. England was the same, you know, where I grew up. It's a little seaside town, but there's maybe 10 meetings a week in the county area. And some of those places, it tells you in the intergroup book that the doorway is hidden, that you can get in there without other people seeing you, so your anonymity isn't broken and you don't lose your job or you don't lose friends. I don't have that here. You know, we walk through the door and we can do it safely. I'm so grateful for that. And so I have friends all over the world, you know, people I've met at the conventions, people that I've met at these places I've been to. Everybody that's in my life in Baltimore now is from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am so safe. When I go back and visit friends in Germany, when I go to Florida, when I go to England, people remember my name and I remember theirs. And after the meeting, we go for coffee and maybe hang out with a newcomer. And it blows my mind. But I'm so blessed to not only have met people from all over the world at places like this and hear that AA exists, but to have physically gone, had that higher power, my higher power, God, step in and have me in meetings within a week so that I have that accountability and the service position. To have seen those things in person and know they exist, like to hear someone talk about their higher power and then get my own and know that it exists, is so powerful. And I'm so blessed to be able to share that with others so they're not scared when they go somewhere else and they know that AA is right there. And so I'm really grateful to be with you guys today, and thank you for letting me share.
My name is Sean, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Vancouver, British Columbia, and we're going to get to do this in 10 years, which we're looking forward to. By the grace of God and the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and strong sponsorship, meetings, being of service, and fellowship of people exactly like you, it hasn't been necessary for me to have a drink or to ingest any self-administered mind-altering chemicals that affect me from the neck up since April 24th of 1974. And so I just wanted you to know that it works in Vancouver. But of course, it also works in Madrid, and it works in Venezuela, and it works in England, and it works in Ireland, and it works in Prague. And it works in India, and it works in Japan. It works all over the place because people are working it. And I'm very grateful to be one of those people, and thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tusha, and I'm an alcoholic. Everyone calls me Mr. T. My friends call me Mr. T. I was born in India. I was born and brought up. But I've been living in England since 2002. I'm a British national. I live in England now. But I had to go back to India. God had different plans for me. And before I start, my sobriety date is the 1st of November 2012. I've just been doing it one day at a time. And I always say this, you know, my first meeting was in London in 2006. Now, I'm not a racist person. But when I got to the meeting, I was in a meeting full of white people, and they were talking about God. And I didn't like it. So I ran away. I didn't come back for the next 6 years. And when I woke up in India, 2012. And I tried to play with fire for the next 2 months. But I sobered up, man. My higher power separated me from alcohol. I just ever had one obsession to drink, but I always stick to the program, keep close to God, perform His work well. And I'm just grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. Thank you.
Thank you, Tushar.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mathias. I'm an alcoholic. I come from Copenhagen, Denmark. Hi. So it's said that the Danes are the happiest people on the planet. And back when I was drinking, I was like, yeah, we are one of the hardest drinking people on the planet. alcohol is everywhere. You can buy it from you are 15 years old. I know I did, like a lot of people. I grew up in a home where drinking alcohol was viewed as a normal solution if you are feeling bad, like self-medication. I've been an active alcoholic for about 16 years. My sobriety date is the 28th of July last year, so I'm coming up on a year soon. Thanks. Things are still pretty rough. I mean, I make up a lot of excuses to be in control. I would do that when active too. Like, for instance, I was born with 3 kidneys. That makes me special. So, Warren, if you're taking notes, we'll work something out. I'm going to say something about the meetings in Denmark. It's an amazingly strong community. We got infected by the Germans and back in the day. In Copenhagen, the capital where I live, there are at least 100 meetings a week. I don't know, a great deal. There's a lot of good recovery, and now many of our sister communities like Cocaine Anonymous, Sexaholics, Marijuana, all that is explosive growth thanks to the inspiration from the AA groups. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, T.S. So I think we have time for these 3 people that are here, and then we'll wrap up. Okay.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is actually in Boca Raton, Florida, and my sobriety date was April 1st, 1989. And, yay! I've been meetings in many different countries. I lived for a little bit in Singapore with my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time, and now she's my wife. But the most interesting thing, I guess, about my sobriety is that I celebrated my 7th year of sobriety at Edmundson Scott South Pole Station, Antarctica. I don't recommend it, but but hey, I can pull that out in parties and stuff like that. But I was the only one in the program at the station. there was 26 of us. It was a year of isolation. 6 months of that, there was no sun. And it was pretty brutal. And I also had a moment of like, if I have to do this again, I'm probably going to drink, you know? So it was kind of like a nice little humbling thing where I became very intimate with how fragile I am physically, emotionally, spiritually, and whatever else, that I'm just like, you know, just that, you know, so it was a very humbling thing, but also that but one of the things that helped me out, well, first of all, there's actually a meeting on the coast of Antarctica at, McMurdo Station. So if you're in the neighborhood, the U.S. Navy's chaplain office actually maintains a regular meeting there. And I'm pretty sure that's the southernmost meeting in the world, in case you're interested in. One of the things that kept me, one of the things that really saved my butt, I guess, is that there was a family back in the United States that was a ham radio operator, and they actually found out, they heard about me, that was a program, and they sent me a big big care package with like chocolate, coffee, and a whole bunch of tapes. And I paced back. So eventually I found I had a special time in the gym. The gym at the station was about the size of this stage up here. And I would put in one of the tapes and I would just pace back and forth inside the heated room, and I'd work out or whatever. And I would just say so-and-so, the guy on the tape would say, "My name's Dave," and I'll call, and I'd say, "Hi, Dave," and somebody walked in once and then they left. And then that was because they heard me talking to the guy on the tapes, and they're like, "Okay, Chris is gone." That was my time then. That was my time in the gym. And then I eventually the sun came back. A couple months later, the first opening, the first plane came in. And a month or so after that, they let me finally leave. I went to McMurdo Station from Amundsen Scott. And then at McMurdo, I went to the southernmost meeting, and it was great because I talked to other guys and I talked to some other people that were heading back to Pole. And I was like, "Okay, let me warn you about something. Everybody wants to buy your liquor ration." and then finally I made it out to Christchurch, New Zealand. And they kind of just drop you off. Like, "Oh, here you go. Okay, you're in New Zealand." And then you're kind of on your own. And then the people in New Zealand took me in, basically. They're like, literally a family took me in. And I looked scary. I looked like, like scraggy. And I used the F word every other time. I'm amazed that they took me in. But then they did. And other young people took me to meetings. I was like, I got sober when I was 20. So I was like 26, 27 at the time. And they took me to other meetings, and it was blast. And it was so much fun. I've never been like a real AA person or something like that. But after that, it was like I realized just how important AA was for me, and I became one of those people, and I became an integral member of AA. And it was hard to describe. It was someone just returning civilization. It was like a sense of like being allowed to exhale after a year, and finally going in, and then just like, okay, and I'm just like. And I made it, and just being back in the fold again. It was just something that I didn't even appreciate. I don't understand how important it was to me. And so now I'm really grateful, and I love hearing all the people talk about meetings in other countries. Like I said, I lived in Singapore for a little bit, and there was a little meeting group there, and there was meeting. It was great going to meetings in Southeast Asia and stuff like that. And I really love hearing your guys' stories. So thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm June, and I'm an alcoholic from the Bayville Triangle Group in Long Island, New York. And my sober date is November 24th, 1986. Yes. And I'm happy to say I'm here with a good friend who was there when I first walked in. She has 4 years more than me. And I'm here with friends than I was there when they walked in. And we're still going to meetings, and we're still sober, and we're still doing everything we were told in the very beginning. Just a funny story this morning. I'm walking through the lobby of the hotel. We're staying, a few subway stops away. And a semi-famous actor walked through the lobby, somebody whose work I knew and admired. And I walked up to him, and I introduced myself, and I said, "Thank you so much," for blah, 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 and I knew a few things. And it was his opening. And he stopped, and he said to me, he touched this, he said, "Who are you people?" He's here for an acting job. And all right, so this was not at the level of press, radio, television. This was just a very nice person. And I said to him, "We're 60,000 plus recovering alcoholics, and we clean up good." And sometimes it's nice to let somebody know. Anyway, what I've come to understand is that the same stuff I did on day one, we got sober, the bunch of us, in Forest Hills, New York, and it was real deep, intense sobriety. It was competitive to get commitments. You had to campaign in advance to get the beginner commitment. I wasn't cute enough for the secretary commitment the first go around. It was intense sobriety. It was big book. It was steps. It was traditions. It was service, sponsorship, all that basic stuff. And that's where I got the beginnings. Then I did that, get married, move to the suburbs, have a baby, all that stuff. And I didn't go to meetings for 4 years. I didn't know I was going to say any of this. And I was stone cold sober. I had a conscious contact with my higher power. I never picked up a drink or a drug. But when they told me this was the disease of the attitudes, oh my God. And when they told me that my life could be unmanageable, it was worse than any drink or drug, and I was a drinker. I was ugly. I'm sober now longer than I drank, but I know where I came from. And after I was homicidal and suicidal, and I've seen enough CSIs to know how to kill him and get away with it, I went back to AA meetings 9.5 years ago and never looked back. And I am doing everything I was told the first go around. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I do service. I do a lot of service. I do a lot of fellowship. I have a sponsee I meet once a month and we read the concepts. I'm very into the traditions. To me, AA comes of age is to traditions what the big book is to the steps. And I'm really into it. I had a horrific experience about 5 years ago when the economy collapsed. Anybody else go through that? And lost a lot of important things to me and got deeper into my steps and deeper into my relationship with my higher power. I used my sponsor until she squeaked. I never missed a home group meeting. And now, 5 years later, I came out of it better than any script I could have written. And my gratitude has changed from A, B, C, and D to, oh, thank God I'm not in charge. Thank you. And 25 years ago, I went to the convention in Seattle. My soon-to-be husband was such a miserable mess, I told him, if I ever get to go back again, you're not invited. So I'm here with my best friend and grateful beyond belief. And thank you all for sharing your sobriety with me.
Good afternoon, family. My name is Pepe, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 18th, 1988. I tell people that I was made in Mexico and born in the United States. And I've traveled the world. I am a product of the military. I grew up in San Francisco, and at age 18, I had to get out of Dodge. And I thought that the United States Navy was the place that would take care of me. So when I signed the contract, it says, do you now, have you ever had a problem with alcohol? And I said, no. But in the back of my mind, I said, maybe this is it. Maybe the Navy could save me. Maybe the Navy could do something about my drinking. And at 18 years old, I didn't think that that was something a normal 18-year-old had to think about. And that was a qualifier for me. But it wasn't until a couple years later in the Navy, in Andros, Bahamas, when I took my last drink. I was 21, and I was at the end. It was the very end, and we were living in trailers on the base. It was a small base, and there was 1,000 people on this base, and the AA meetings were in one trailer over from where I was living, and somebody else that I knew was sober, I asked him if he'd take me to a meeting. He took me to my very first meeting there in Andros, Bahamas. And then from there, they sent me to Puerto Rico for treatment. And when I got to Puerto Rico, living in the barracks there was like living in a college dorm. There was alcohol everywhere. And it was a very toxic environment. And these people from the AA in Puerto Rico that I didn't know would come down, drive miles to the base to pick me up. They would take me to coffee. They would take me to eat dinner. They would take me to meetings. And I was like, who are these people? Why are they being so nice to me? Why are they driving like an hour just to pick me up to take me to a meeting? And that fellowship, that love, that unconditional love, is what kept me in the rooms from the very beginning, because I had never experienced that kind of unconditional love. And throughout the time in my military career, I traveled the world. I was in Crete, Greece, at 5 years of sobriety, and we were a very small group. There was two meetings a week. There was five of us. It was me, another military guy, a British guy, a retired American lady, and a Greek national. And that was it. That was our group, you know. And I tell you what, if you had a problem with somebody in that group, you had to deal with it. You couldn't go next door, down the mile, over to the next city. If you didn't like the people that were in that room, you had to work it. You had to work the steps over it or not go back, because that was all we had. It was two meetings a week, five members. And so you learn to deal with your issues in that meeting. And prior to that, I was stationed in Seattle or in the Seattle area, and I was there at that convention in 1990, but I wasn't working a program. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have any kind of tools or anything. And then when I got to Greece, one of the other sailors, he took me through the steps, and it was in 5 years of sobriety when I finally learned how to work this program in Greece. Flash forward to 17 years of sobriety in Bahrain, over in the Middle East. There we had two groups, seven meetings a week, and those meetings were like international conventions every night. The young lady spoke earlier about how we had people from all over coming to these meetings. We had American military, we had Bahraini nationals, we had expats that would come over from other countries, from Saudi Arabia. They would come over to our English-speaking meeting, and expats from everywhere, and it was like an international meeting every night. That was my home group for a year. I sponsored these guys from Bahrain that didn't speak any English or very little English, and would take them through the book, you know, one word at a time or a sentence at a time. And when I left there, they asked me if I would carry the flag of Bahrain at the Toronto Convention in 2005. So here I was on active duty military in Toronto, dressed as an Arab with the thobe and the headdress and everything, waving the flag for Bahrain at the flag ceremony. And that has got to be the most high point of my life in sobriety. To, you know, some dumb punk kid from San Francisco, you know, to be travel the world, end up in another country, and be given the honor to represent their flag while serving for the United States military. You know, who would have thought? So I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love all of you, and I am better for having known you. Thank you very much.